Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin. It's Sunday morning in the middle of December 2022. And here we are. I'm Lizzie, this is Justin. And we are Third Space, showing up here as Turning Towards Life, which is a, what is it, Justin? A podcast and a broadcast and a conversation and an inquiry and a relationship and an ongoing wandering into all kinds of different things. And you are so welcome to be with us. And we're so lucky that you listen. That's what I feel so miraculous when anybody says to me, oh, I listen almost every week and I'm so grateful, or I'm in hospital and finding it difficult and I have this on my iPod. All of the different ways that people listen is such a miracle to me. So thank you for being here, whoever you are, wherever you are, whenever you're listening, however you're listening, we are in appreciation of you. And as with every week, we have a source. This week, Justin's chosen our source from this wonderful book by Oliver Berkman called 4,000 Weeks. And we've had a few sources actually from Oliver Berkman, haven't we, Justin? And it seems to me like a very big and important book for you, and it is for me too, Justin, and I'm really glad to be here with it. And just in case anybody's wondering, I'm completely confounded and confused by this source, because time and conversations about time make me completely undone and I don't know what to do with myself. So I'm really looking forward to feeling into the undoneness and not knowing what to do with myself when we talk about this concept of time and what it does to us, what on earth it is, all of those things. So thank you, Justin, for always picking undoing sources for us to get into together.
Thanks, Lizzie. Hello, everyone. It's a great joy to be here and to be in this conversation again. Loved what you said, Lizzie, about all the different places that people listen to this. So I also want to add my welcome to everyone, regardless of the circumstances in which you're listening. It's so good to have, or maybe I want to say it the other way, particularly because of the circumstances in which you're listening, whatever they are, it's so wonderful to have you all with us and to know, Lizzie, we've said this before, that this conversation is part, it's sort of like the center of many concentric circles of conversation, some of which happen between you and I, and some of which happen because people write to us or post in our Facebook group, but also the many that are happening inside us all as we engage in this, and that I know happen between people from listening. So it's a very good feeling to feel the global, and I mean this not just in terms of around the world, but the bigness that these conversations really are. In a way, they're not just conversations between you and me. So this source, I looked back because I wanted to see how many times we'd read Oliver Berkman. This is the third. So about once a year we circle around to Oliver and his work. And a little part of the background before we read this, I didn't know that this was going to happen, and I was just telling you about this before we came on, Lizzie, that last night at a very, very beautiful birthday celebration for a very dear friend who is turning 53, we sat round our dining room table in our house, which is the same table that we've sat round with the same group of friends since we were in our 20s. And we wondered how it could be that we were all in our 50s and what that was like to experience that, and how confounding that was. Because we couldn't figure out what time was or where it went or how it happened. And it seemed to me that you can't, anyway, we'll get into this, but you can't hold on to it, you can't see it. What even is it? It's so easy to take it for granted, and yet it's probably among the most mysterious somethings. Mm. Even if you can even call it you probably definitely can't call it a something, but it's so fundamental to our lives. So Oliver Berkman's book, as you know, Lizzie, is an amazing book about this, and really asking some questions about the kind of stories we have about time in our current world and how they, in a way, how they make life harder for us than it might be, and what some alternatives might be that might help us. But also, actually rereading Oliver Burton again over the last few days might also help us help one another and help the planet that we seem so determined to undo, when we could be helping weaving it together. So this is We Are Time, and it's, you can find the source always in our Facebook group, which you're all very welcome to join. You can get it by email if you go to turningtowards.life, and you can sign up and get this by email each week. And we have turningtowards.life, our lovely website. And of course, you probably know this if you're listening, we're on podcasts all over the place. So this will be in the show notes for the podcast too. Because you can't dictate or because you can't dictate or even accurately predict so much of what happens with the finite portion of time you do get to live, you'll never feel that you're securely in charge of events, immune from suffering, primed and ready for whatever comes down the pike. The deeper truth behind all this is to be found in Heidegger's mysterious suggestion that we don't get or have time at all, that instead we are time. We'll never get the upper hand in our relationship with the moments of our lives because we are nothing but those moments. To master them would first entail getting outside of them, splitting off from them. But where would we go? Time is the substance I am made of, writes Jean-Louis Borges. Time is a river that sweeps me along, but I am the river. It is a tiger which destroys me, but I am the tiger. It is a fire which consumes me, but I am the fire. There's no scrambling up to the safety of the riverbank when the river is you. And so insecurity and vulnerability are the default state, because in each of the moments that you inescapably are, anything could happen, from an urgent email that scuppers your plans for the morning to a bereavement that shakes your world to its foundations.
Thank you, Justin. Because you can't dictate or even accurately predict so much of what happens with the finite portion of time you do get to live, you'll never feel that you're securely in charge of events, immune from suffering, primed and ready for whatever comes down the pike. The deeper truth behind all this is to be found in Heidegger's mysterious suggestion that we don't get or have time at all, that instead we are time. We'll never get the upper hand in our relationship with the moments of our lives because we are nothing but those moments. To master them would first entail getting outside of them, splitting off from them. But where would we go? Time is the substance I am made of, writes Jean-Louis Borges. Time is a river that sweeps me along, but I am the river. It's a tiger which destroys me, but I'm the tiger. It's a fire which consumes me, but I am the fire. There is no scrambling up to the safety of the riverbank when the river is you. And so insecurity and vulnerability are the default state, because in each of the moments that you inescapably are, anything could happen. From an urgent email that scuppers your plans for the morning to a bereavement that shakes your world to its foundations.
I so get what you said, Lizzie, about this piece of writing being upending and really hard to work out, to even begin to work out what this is or what's going on. And that's exactly why I wanted to bring it, because I wanted to explore it with you in the spirit with which we come into this conversation of seeing what happens. And I realized that since I first came across this idea from Martin Heidegger's thinking, this way of considering that we might be time, it's had such a profound impact on me, and I really don't know what it means yet. But what I can feel is it's such a different place to stand from I have time, or time has me, or I don't have time, or I've got to, or I don't have enough time, or I've got to get in control of time, or I've got to manage time, or I have to use time. You know, all of the metaphors we have for what time is, put it outside us, and most importantly, put us outside it. Like there's something I could do to get outside of it. And if I could look at time from the outside, I'd be able to figure out how to have the most meaningful time, for example, or how to have the most efficient time, or how not to be. I think a lot of what we try to do with time often is to try to not be affected by it. Could really feel this. I've been talking to somebody I've been coaching. We've been talking a lot about time and about how we can experience time as pressure and demand. And we try to sort of in the day-to-day, time management seems to be somehow getting out of being affected by time on us. And then sitting around the table celebrating with friends last night, I could feel the part of me that both really deeply valued and treasured that we were still all here 30 more and more years after we first remember sitting around the same table. And then I can also feel that of me that wanted to have frozen time and still be 22 and have everything ahead of us. That's no longer ahead of us. Whatever else is ahead of us is ahead of us. But to have that back. And what I know about all of those is they're all fruitless ways of looking. I can't freeze it. I can't be in control of it. I can't get outside it. I can't have it not affect me. I can't, you know, all of those strategies, they don't lead anywhere. So to start to entertain the possibility that that's because we are it, that time somehow is something that is inseparable from the kinds of beings we each are. It doesn't happen to us, it doesn't happen through us, it is what it is to be a living human being. What I think is so amazing as a thought is it immediately lends the possibility, first of all, that I could give up all of the strategies that I've been trying, which don't lead anywhere. But then it also makes me wonder about what relationships we have with ourselves and with one another that we could cultivate towards time. Like we could nurture time. We could allow time. We could honor time. We could marvel at time. We could love time for being the very thing. It's inseparable from our being here. Time is inseparable. It's not a curse or something. It is the very foundation of our, my Justinness, your Lizziness, and our humanness is all an expression of time. And we could, what else could we do? We could let ourselves be carried by time, like we might be carried by the longings of our own hearts. So that's where I begin with this, is with this possibility that in not treating time as anything separate from myself, I have to give up all of my manipulating strategies and everything that brings.
I think at this point, I'm supposed to be able to respond to you. Honestly, it's very, very undoing for me to be in this conversation. I feel like my whole imagination is kind of darting around madly with all these reference points of what this all means. I feel kind of shot into some other way of living, but like a way of existing as you're talking and as we've read this. Like I've been making a massive mistake for a really long time. And so it's one of those things that I think has been so invisible, you know, like a thing that gets brought forth to have a conversation about, like we're doing now, which has lived in the background of things. You know, like time is so considered in everything, like when we meet, how long things take, how many years we've been alive, what, how much light there is. You know, it's like we've overlaid time onto absolutely everything. So I feel like time is this strange kind of overlay that we've mistaken as something that's substantial rather than an overlay onto being, onto life. And so now in the conversation, I guess I'm sensing into all the ways that we've made it something that it isn't. Like as if it could put pressure on us, you know, as if it is a something that's doing something to us. Like that doesn't make sense anymore. And so I'm feeling, you know, you say this like 100,000 times that we're interpretive beings, you know, we're making meaning of things all the time. And I feel like a big piece of meaning I've been making has been kind of swiped away in the conversation. And so it's having me kind of, I can't get out the river if I'm the river. It's so twisty. Like I don't really know what to do with that. And at the same time, in this kind of undoing quality, it feels very potent and alive, and like my eyes are wide open. Like I'm thrown into, oh, okay, now that means I don't know what anything is. How exciting. You know, that kind of, so if I look at my relationship to time today with this in the field of my wondering, I can sense a real relaxation in me around it. Because I think I'm a grasper, you know, I think I'm grasping things all the time. I'm hanging on to things all the time. Like, I know that it's my brother's birthday today, and I'm already grasping onto the moments where we're going to sing to him and bring a gift. And the children are probably going to be overly excited about the candles and the cake. Like, I'm already there. I'm already also grieving that it's not happening anymore. Like, I feel like I'm all of the timeline in any moment. So even in that observation, I can also see that those punctuations that are made by the language that we use around time, like, oh, we're going to arrive at 2 o'clock, and then at 3 o'clock this is going to happen, and I think the World Cup final is on today, I don't know who's playing in it, but I think that's part of the thing that we're doing, and that happens at a certain time, and then food is planned, and it's like I can feel that it hasn't happened yet. It's happening, and it's already happened all at once. And I think that's part of the kind of undoing in me at this moment, is that I'm somehow in this moment not really believing the overlay of the kind of the way that we languish the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so I've been getting really curious recently, Justin. I think I mentioned this to you the other day. I love anticipating things. Like, I love the thought of meeting someone that I love and having a conversation about them. And many times in my life, it's been that the thought of it and the feeling and the imagination of it is actually better than when the thing itself happens, which has been a big source of grief for me, of like, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, basically not able to be present enough that I can live in the moment or whatever. And of course, Oliver Berkman is saying we are the moment, and that's all we are. So of course I can't live in it. you know, it's like already that even living in the moment is being undone for me, because I am it. So I can't live in it, because that others the moment, and the othering of the moment is not what this is suggesting life is. So I feel really undone again, just even in this moment saying that thing. But I feel like I'm trying to find a way of being with myself that's allowing my anticipation to be a real experience as well, rather than feeling like it's silly, or I shouldn't be that, or I should be able to live in the moment more fully or something. And so, and the whole anticipation thing is another thing to do with time. But if I undo the relationship I have with time in some way, the anticipation is just as valid as the moment that the actual thing happens in that I'm anticipating. So I think it's like all collapsing, and it's very welcome, because it's so easy for my inner critic to get hold of me and tell me that I'm doing something wrong, or that I should be more like this or like that. And I don't know how to even process this, but I've got the sense that the inner critic and time are quite, or the concept of time that we've created, that I've created, they seem to be quite friendly with each other. I haven't made enough of my life is a combination of time and inner critic. I should have done this before now. Procrastination is to do with time and performance, like getting something done. Yeah, I feel like there's so much that gets dismantled by inquiring into what I've made time into in my life.
I'm very gladly being discombobulated by what you're saying. Yeah. So feeling this thing you're saying about anticipation, that even in certain circles, it's very, very fashionable to say the thing to do is to live in the moment. Now, because now is all we have. But even that seems like an attempt to get on the outside of time and to manage it. So you'll have a better experience of time if you stop worrying about the past and, you know, stop feeling guilty about the past and worrying about the future and just live now. Except the past and the future are here too all the time. They're always with us. The anticipation of your brother's birthday celebration and the memory of the birthday celebrations past, they're all here. So to try to pull ourselves out of time and go, I was feeling for you what a loss I imagine it would be to not feel the joy of anticipation, even though that joy of anticipation also comes with grief, that maybe the actual thing isn't the way you'd anticipated it and it's gone. But to try and force ourselves into a relationship with time that will free us from feeling time seems to me to be exactly that. Also, it's as misguided. It might have helpful things in it. Time management is both misguided and really helpful. I'm not trying to clear us out of all of those things at all, but just to wonder about a way in which we hold them differently. And as you were talking, I could feel myself holding in my own inside a sort of wanting to hold with reverence the feeling of anticipation for something yet to come, and the sadness that it had passed and the joy that it was. And the, in a way, holding with reverence all the parts of me that want to fight with the finiteness of life, wanting to let all of that somehow, and it's really hard to give language to, somehow if I could see, let all of that be there. And as we sat round the table last night, you know, I noticed you were talking about, I think you'd called yourself a grasper, Lizzie, and I could feel the way I get into, what's the word, anticipatory grief. You know, I was thinking, well, I remember sitting around this table 30 years ago, which doesn't seem very long ago at all, like that moment is still here. So that's time. I can feel that that moment is still here, even though I don't remember all of it fully and I've got impressions of it. It didn't go away. It is us. But I could also feel myself wondering, how many more times will we do this? And in 30 years' time, we may not all be here. And I could feel all of this grasping and clinging and holding on, and then I want to fight it, or I want to. But if I could let myself in, that sort of, there's something so strongly implied, I could feel in the way that you were saying it. What if I let myself feel that us in our 20s is here, and us in our 80s, whoever of us are here, is here. And my wrangling with time is here, and my joy and what time brings is here, and not try to escape it, and not try to manage it, but not remove myself from it. Somehow this, it is what I am, invites me into a kind of, I hadn't thought about it this way before, a sort of intimacy with it. Like, what if I could treat time not just as myself, like time as a lover, for example? What would that time itself, with all of its everything, all of its contours and all of its everything, what would that be? And then I would want to be an expression of it. I would want to dance in it. I would want to somehow all of the attempts to force it to be anything in particular, including the there's only now, you know, approach to spiritual development, would all dissolve, but somehow nothing would dissolve at the same time. So anticipation and grief could still live there, could still live in it.
Well, as you're talking, Justin, I can again happily, presently undone and discombobulated. But I just had this thought, this feeling. Oh, I don't even know how to say this. I'm connecting or disconnecting. I don't know what I'm doing. There's this thing about practice. So I can feel that you and I, you know, you're the person who remembers the numbers and the time of weeks and the years and all those kind of things, which is a bit like not in my awareness. So when you tell me, I'm always surprised, like I haven't been counting and I don't really know. And, you know, but there's something really different about me saying to you, we spend time together, versus we practice something again and again and again and again and again. Like what gets made through practicing and again and againness is a different experience for me than us just spending time together. I can't quite separate it, but I'm sensing into what an intentional again and againness thing creates in me as a being. And I can feel all of the places where, oh, it's so difficult to talk about this. Those places in my life that are filled with the again and againness with people feel like that is my life. And there are plenty of ways that I've been in things, spent time, I don't even know how to use that phrase anymore, spent time with people that haven't. Oh, I guess what I'm saying is that I can feel the value of again and againness and intentionality in terms of how creative it is from my experience of being a human being. And the bits that are more, I don't know what the word is, frivolous or something, or just something to do because of whatever reason, without much intentionality in it, they have created a different thing. And I don't even know what I'm really saying, but there's something emerging in me about understanding the life-giving nature of practicing again and again with people that seems to me to be one of those things that when I reflect and imagine this is my last day, the threads that got created by those things are going to be the things that are most dear to my heart somehow.
It's an amazing place for us to end what you just brought in, because I can feel that what you've also done, you've in naming the again and againness of this conversation, which I enjoy seeing that we're still at it and we've been doing it for 5 years, and you can count the number of conversations, you can do all of that, which is linear time like a line. But really, I could feel as you were talking that time as a line is a concept of time as well. Time isn't a line. We draw it as lines and we imagine it as lines and we imagine it clocking up in numbers, but it isn't any of those things. Those are all really useful concepts that we've imposed upon time, because time is also what it is to keep going round and round and round and round and round and round. And like, this conversation, we go round and round and round. We travel the same ground and different ground all the time. And I can feel as we end, I'm looking at the clock, I can see it's time to end, but I also know in my body when it's time to end, thereabouts, from what it's been like to go round in this practice again and again. So there's something I'm searching for the words, but I wanted to honor what you were bringing, which was an undoing of the straightforward arrow of time that goes from one place to another, and pointing out that so much of what's meaningful in our lives isn't structured that way at all.
Mm.
And as we end today, I can feel the ending of every other one of the conversations that we've had. Every time we've ended is here too, because it's the same moment. So gosh, there's a whole thing, but to be reminded that circular practice, that repeating is a really fruitful mode of living. That's what I took that you just said, which is so different from I've got to get from place A to B, or my time is running out. Or so thank you as always for being so willing and courageous to enter into this conversation with me when we don't have a clue what this really is. It's not like we've sat down with expertise on this subject or something. We've really been discovering together, and it's great joy and privilege to do that and to be in a partnership that can have that happen.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, everybody, for being here with us.
We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.